Welcome to this week's episode of Rink Stories. Your host, Bob Winter.
Thank you, Matt, and welcome to episode 63 of the Rink Stories podcast. This is your host, Bob Winter, and joining me, as always, from behind the glass, producing from Remsen Ave Production Studios in Beverly Hills, California, Matt Hoff. What's cooking, Matt?
You know, every time you ask me that or get ready to answer that, I know exactly what I'm going to say until the moment you ask. And I had all these things lined up, and then when you asked the question, I was like, I'm not going to say any of that shit. I think that we have a special guest. We have a listener that I've actually met in person. Believe we shared, we broke bread, and we actually had some alcohol.
Yeah.
Quite a bit of alcohol on a rainy, rainy weekend.
I want to bring our guest in. This person gives me more feedback about and support for this podcast than anyone except for Matt, and that includes my family.
Sure.
Please welcome this 6'3" forward out of Arlington, Massachusetts, from the 65 birth year, a man known by many nicknames, Jenna, Pinna, Tina, Quinna, Kona, Sand Tiger, Quintiliani, the G-Force, David Genovesian.
Hello, everybody. I'm honored and privileged to be here. Very excited. And thanks for having me.
Make sure you bring that Boston accent, baby. Come on now.
I can't help but bring that Boston accent. In fact, the episode in which you put me and the boys on the tail end having some discussions about rinks, the first thing I said is, listen to this guy's accent. And it was me.
Yeah, I love it.
I'm done with people saying who's number one of anything.
Oh, yes.
It's stupid. Goat. Stupid. There isn't one.
It's tough to compare that bullshit.
One. Yeah.
And anyone, and I always said, anyone
Williams,
today.
Williams DiMaggio. Pick one.
So, David, you're the third Arlington native to appear on the show.
Yes.
Following the great John Missouri, the head coach at Arlington High School.
Yep. I think he was 2 years behind me at Arlington High.
Okay. And the legendary goaltending coach, Joe Bertagna.
Yep. Both great episodes, both great hockey people, and they represent the sport well, and they were enjoyable to listen to for sure.
You following the Spy Ponders?
Not so much.
No, they just lost the other night to Braintree. The Spy Ponders were the 5 seed in the Division I MIAA playoffs, and they lost to number 11 Braintree 4-3. So disappointing end for them.
Well, you mentioned that I'm one of the an avid listener, and I'm quite certain I've heard every episode. And what I found is one thing you guys do, you inform your listeners about the underlying things that happen in hockey, particular because your son was playing at that level, of what happens at high school. What is the MIAA all about? How does it work all through the COVID time and even, you know, out of it?
Yeah.
The seedings, and it's been great to listen to, yourselves as well as the guests that you've had speak on that.
So since you're such a big fan, I wanted to bring something up. Have either of you boys heard of ChatGPT? It's in the news lot.
I'm all over it. I've been using it every day in my life.
Yes. So
it's obviously the artificial intelligence chatbot, right? That launched a few months ago. It's been in the news a lot lately. And basically, you can type anything in there via interactive chat, and it'll give you an answer. Right. Kids are cheating by having it write their papers.
It's artificial intelligence that's been fed so much information that when it writes something, it writes it at a freshman, sophomore, college level.
So it's very controversial. People are very concerned about it, on the impact, and the major companies are all competing with each other to provide
it's
the best
part of Bing. When you go search with Bing, you can go to Bing and start chatting with its artificial intelligence in the Bing search engine.
Yeah.
And it gets creepy.
So how does that apply to Ring Stories?
So I was playing around with it the other day,
You know, I think that's a really good question.
How does this connect? I'm always the one being like, it's a hockey
podcast. How does that relate to the hockey stuff?
I typed in, what is the podcast Rink Stories known for?
Oh, I didn't read that in the thing. Here's what it did.
The podcast Rink Stories is known for its in-depth and engaging storytelling about ice hockey and its role in people's lives. The podcast is hosted.
Oh my God, I love it! Oh God, keep the going. Podcast is hosted by
Bob Winter, who is a lifelong hockey fan and has a passion for sharing the stories of players, coaches, fans, and others who have been impacted by the sports. By the sport. Boy, we have some editing to do.
That is so cool.
It keeps going and it goes, through its storytelling and interviews, Rink Stories aims to capture the essence of what makes hockey such a special sport and how it can bring people together. The podcast has gained a following among hockey fans and players alike, and it has been praised for its authenticity, humor, and heart.
That's a good blurb.
Yeah, so incredible. I mean, that's better than the blurbs that we have, right, Matt?
Dude, I was going to say, so there's a couple things. We've been using it for business. So I'm a fundraising consultant, and a lot of what our clients are doing right now is making changes from a CRM that they use to communicate and store data, constituent relationship management tools. There are some major companies out that have made improvements to their products. So when you're trying to figure out how to help a company select the product, everybody's needs are slightly different. Every product is a little different for them. So we're able to do things where you go to ChatGPT and say, you're an organization that does this and you have these needs, and it recommends the product that it thinks has the most features that match that and gives you unbelievable copy, so that we can enter into a meeting and sound like we've done months of research and done stuff. We've done 4 or 5 ChatGPT searches and we sound like experts. So just for that alone as a tool for business.
It just saves a lot of time, right? Because even if it gave you something that was 80% there, you edit that up and you've saved 80% of your time.
That's the way the tool should be used in school. So for instance, kids are using it to write essays on. So I say, we have the King of Henry VIII, blah, 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 da, da, blah, and they write this thing, right? And so the teachers are now trying now, companies are doing tools to be able to look at the things that you did to tell whether or not it matches what you used to do to see whether or not you're cheating, right? And what you can actually do with the tool is say, okay, I'm going to write my thing and it might not be great, but then I'm going to instruct it to take this and punch up the grammar and make it more coherent and do that. And you can use it as a tool to take what you originally wrote and what is and figure out, okay, well, how can I get there myself that I haven't used this tool in the future and use it as a teaching aid instead? But kids are cheating their asses off, man. Kids are cheating their asses off right now with it.
Dave, you're an educator. What do you hear about ChatGPT and AI?
The kids who are going to cheat will cheat. The kids who will use it to their advantage without cheating will do that for their own integrity and just knowing that it's not going to help them down the road if they just keep on resorting to having let the electronics do the work for them.
This is Joe Bertagna. You're listening to Rink Stories, and please keep coming back.
Given how long it's been since Bobby Orr played and how the game has evolved, how much does Bobby Orr matter today?
To the people that are playing today, he probably doesn't matter at all. I mentioned Ray Bourque the other day to a junior hockey player. I just said Bourque. And he thought I was talking about some guy that plays for Buffalo or the
singer from Iceland, maybe.
Right. I left the New York, but he didn't seem to register who Ray Bourque was. So if that's the case,
wow.
There are a lot of people for whom Bobby Orr would have been like, for me, you know, Howie Morenz or something, you know, they don't understand. If you say a defenseman that would rush the puck was unheard of, what do you mean? You know, a goalie who dropped on his knees without a mask, without the mask, they laugh at. But there's no appreciation. And I'm told that with each generation that the respect for history is not a big thing. They talk about Major League Baseball players. It's more like, how will that help me knowing about some old guy? You know, right. How's that going to help me today? I had a history teacher that I later taught with, who always talked about mankind's irresponsible pursuit of self-interest. And he was such a downer. I mean, you can mention the weather or playing golf, and everything ended up with mankind's irresponsible pursuit of self-interest. But 50 years later, that phrase rings in my head. It's not the pursuit of self-interest. It's the irresponsible pursuit of self-interest. And I think we see examples everywhere you look of people, you know, why would I care about somebody that played in the 1980s or 1970s? How does that affect what I'm trying to get done today? Why should I care about that? You know, I'm hoping that people like women hockey players don't forget that there were women that started programs not that long ago that had to practice at 6 a.m. and didn't come out of programs where they would play with other women, but they picked it up late and they wore figure skates for the first practice. And then they got hockey skates and they fought for better practice time. They fought for a full-time coach. They fought, you know, those are sad stories when people don't care about that, because it wasn't that long ago that those people were opening doors for them. You know, and I don't mean to pick on the women, but any group that's enjoying benefits now that not that long ago they didn't.
Where was Bob last week?
Okay, last week. One game on Wednesday, March 1st, I was at the Richard Rocket Arena at Salem State University in Salem, Massachusetts, to watch an MIAA Division II first-round playoff game between number 16 Marblehead and number 17 Norwood. And that turned out to be my final game as a hockey dad.
That's a bittersweet moment, I guess. Were you relieved, sad, overtaken by emotion, or did you just, you know, throw back a little more of the beer?
I mean, I think there were a lot of different things going on. I was definitely thinking about stuff like this certain anxiety that you get when your kid's playing goalie. There's no other feeling like it. It's good and bad at the same time. I was like, I'll never feel this feeling again unless, like, there's a grandchild or something playing.
By the way, there is one feeling I can compare it to, because we had this conversation once, I don't think you recall, but when I pitched and my mother sat in the stands and prayed that I didn't hit anybody in the head, same feeling.
Yeah. And I had this thing too where my face gets like all red, like almost the color of your Rutgers hat.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's good for the ticker, but I could feel how flush I was, you know what I mean, during the whole thing. But it was a cool night. It was, I mean, first of all, it was cool to have a home game. They squeaked in to get the home game, you know, 16 versus 17. So all the kids were there with, you know, they have this tradition in Marblehead where the kids wear togas to the game and for the student section, or white, but a lot of kids had togas on. And, you know, the moms wore the jerseys that the kids weren't wearing. So I'm actually wearing the black one now.
You said your face got flush and all that, and the blood was that because this was the playoffs and potentially the last game, or did that happen more often than you mentioned?
Oh, it happens every game.
I you never mentioned that until now, that you get that flush in that. You've actually said kind of the opposite and kind of maintained that you've been pretty cool about everything, and your face being on that flush is to the contrary.
Well, I'm cool in that I don't really make a lot of noise or draw attention to myself. Like, I clap politely when something exciting happens in either direction.
Yeah.
You know, but maybe I'm holding it in, and that causes the, you know, near.
So are
stroke.
There times that you're exploring the arena and looking for arena content to avoid the stress of what's going on the ice? Or are you doing that in between?
Oh, I don't. I watch the games wall to wall. So all that.
I'm just checking now because I didn't know about that first part. I'm just checking.
No, I'm not like, oh, I'm getting a little nervous. Let me go look at these plaques again. I think this guy used to be mayor that they named this place after.
Oh, check it out. That's some Espo stuff. Espo played here?
They're having a hockey camp here this summer. What do you think about that?
I've seen Mr. Winter at some games, and I will say I do note that there's an underlying, you know, sense of anxiousness on his part, but there's, you know, as a parent, that's totally understandable. But I think he's quite reserved and paying attention to the game, and he's tracking the shots for both sides. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That was my job this year, was to count the shots for the Twitter, as opposed to doing the whole Twitter.
I was a goalie in soccer too, so I get that feeling. My parents had that same feeling when you're in the goal. It's like your kid lets up a goal and everybody in the stands knows it's your kid, and they kind of eventually at some point get that glance at you like, yeah, that was your kid, whether it's right away or it's a few seconds.
Oh yeah, that happens.
You
a little
get
bit.
All those glances over the next couple of minutes.
An example of how fucking annoying it can be to be the goalie, Dad. I can tell you about how the game went and everything like that in a minute, but we're losing after the second period.
Yeah.
And this mom rolls up and says, we're in a group of people watching. She goes, do you think we should change the goalie? And I'm like, all right, I'm not going to punch you in the face because I'd get in trouble.
She knew it was your kid?
I don't know, actually.
Okay, because there's a different context to the story. If you're wearing like a I Love Griffin t-shirt or something, or Griff's My Kid or whatever.
She was a mom from years gone by, but you know, a lot of people from the previous years came to the playoff game and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
And I think the last time we saw her at a game, the other kid was playing goalie. So she was like, why isn't Griffin in there? You know, like that kind of thing.
I know the final score of the game. So what was the score after two?
3-0.
So did you guys get two and then give up two? This kind of final was 5-2, right?
I think we were down 4-0 at one point. Came back, got a couple of goals.
3-2.
And then did I write 3-2 in there?
No, I said it'd been so much better if the story went. They got back to 3-2.
No,
we gave up a couple empty netters.
there was an empty netter at the end, but I can tell you how the goals went. But my kid's big quote after the game was, I stopped every single normal shot.
So was there a lot of screening and a lot of tipping?
Here's what happens. You didn't go to this one, Dave, did you?
Yes.
Okay. I think your daughter was there. But anyway, so the other team, who was it, Norwood, they get to the center line and they send it into our zone. And it's one of those ones that kind of zips along the boards and it's going to go behind the net, right? And so our defenseman retreats back to get the puck. And my kid does his thing to watch the puck and get into position for whatever's going to happen next. And then all of a sudden, the puck, which was shot in pretty hard, hits some sort of protrusion in the Zamboni door.
Yeah.
And pops straight up in the air and lands like 10 feet in front of the goal.
Oh, geez.
And both Griffin and the defenseman that was back there, they both lost track of the puck. They were both like spinning around looking for the puck.
Literally whoever had the puck had an open net shot with the puck.
Yeah. So some guy came down like 10 feet away in front of the net, just like banged it in. It was like, boom, 1-0. I'm like, oh, you got to be fucking kidding me.
Yeah. Freak goal like that to start the game is tough.
Yeah. But that was actually in the second period after, you know, a scoreless first period where, you know, all saves were made.
So wait, I'm sorry, Bob. Scoreless first period and then. So you must be now a shade of like a light purple or something with a scoreless first period.
Oh, and my kid had to make some insane saves in the first period. There were a couple of flurries and I was like, yes, we can do this, you know? Yeah. And then, so then after the one goal, it's like, okay, we're only down 1-0. No big deal, right? It's halfway through the game.
It's a demoralizing kind of goal because you're playing your ass off. I hate that kind of shit.
Yeah. So fast forward 5 minutes. It was a clean game. There were no penalties up to this point. Norwood gets a penalty, right? So we're on the power play. Here we go. Let's go headers. Let's get this done. First thing they do within right off of the faceoff, which was in their end, little bounce at the blue line. The other kid gets a 120-foot breakaway. Norwood kid, shorthanded, goes down, scores.
What happened? So no. Give us a little bit more of that. Goes down, scores. What did he do? He deked the goalie. He go left. The goalie went right. What did he do? Give us a little more than that.
I have not rewatched this, so I can't be very precise about it.
Okay.
But basically, the faceoff is in Norwood's end,
mm-hmm.
to the right of the goalie, to the left as you're looking down there.
Mm-hmm.
We win the faceoff to the forward who's against the wall. The forward who's against the wall goes to rotate the puck to the defenseman who's just inside the blue line, kind of right in the center. That's the way they rotated for that moment. One of the Norwood guys, I guess one of the forwards, had headed out that way and stole the puck.
Yeah.
it was, I don't know if it was a bad pass, if there was a bounce in there or whatever, but anyway, he was off to the races from his own blue line.
I think what Matt's asking is, did he roof it? Did he go five hole? Did he, you know, did Griffin go left and he went right? Glove side.
Yeah.
A little bit of a move. The guy was moving pretty fast and it was shot over Griffin's blocker.
Right shoulder.
But wait, I always get mixed up.
Left side's the glove.
Blocker's
right
on the right
shoulder.
Hand.
Yeah, right, right shoulder.
Yeah, so
that's the best place to go, right shoulder, right?
Yeah, it wasn't roofed.
So just over his shoulder when he was down crouched.
So a clean breakaway shorthanded.
I think so. Yeah. Did he go down? I don't remember. Like I said, I didn't rewatch it. But anyway, so those things like breakaways, you're talking like that's a 50-50 thing. You've seen shootouts and stuff.
Dude, I've you got to dive as a soaker guy, dive for the ball or go back. I mean, you know, you got choices. Yep. And
then a minute later, still on the power play, puck goes down on our end. One of our defensemen picks it up behind our net and sort of, I don't want to say too much about the kids because they all played their hearts out and everything like that, and I love them all. Takes the puck out slowly from behind the net, and one of the Norwood guys just like bum rushed him and stole the puck from him basically at the edge of the blue of the goal crease.
Yeah.
Just jammed it in.
Was he uncertain which direction to go or something? He was hesitating or he was coming out slowly?
He was coming out slowly and didn't anticipate that kid coming so hard at him with the forecheck. So now it's like, okay, the Zamboni door goal, and you give up two shorties on one power play.
Yeah.
So now we're like 5 minutes left in the second. We're down 3-0. That was it.
Oh, that's terrible.
Like I said, they came back a little bit the next period. They actually, I think they had the better of the play in the third period, but overall, I think Norwood was the better team. And Norwood went on. So since it was a 16-17 matchup, Norwood, the winner of that game, had to go on and play Tewksbury, who was the number one seed in the whole state. Absolute wagon. They beat Tewksbury 5-2.
Really?
So what's your mentality on that? Are you like, well, I guess Norwood's not that bad. It's not so bad losing to them. Or you're like, oh shit, we could have beat Tewksbury because we were as good as Norwood overall. What's your mentality on that as you watch that?
Every game is you could be the better team and not win. You show up that day and your guys just don't have the zip in their step and all that. So there's a way to feel better about the loss and say, well, they went on and beat the team that was supposed to win it all. So you can feel good about yourself. But
yeah,
that's making excuses, in my opinion.
Yeah. The Rink Stories podcast is produced by Matt Hoff. Artwork by Ken Klein. Music by Ken Klein, The Monobs, TFIC, and Bob's Lounge. While you're here, please subscribe, rate, review, and send a link to your friends.
Joining us today on Wrist Shots is Dave Genovisian, the man known to send 3 a.m. texts to tell you how he loved your podcast. Rapid fire questions, 10 questions. I'm so happy you're here. Are you ready?
I am ready.
First rink you skated on?
That would have been what we used to just call the rink in Arlington, down on Summer Street. And now I believe it's known as the Edward Burns Memorial Rink.
Biggest shithole arena.
I think I'm going to turn the tables on this one. I'll say one of the nicest places I've skated on is a place up in Jackson, New Hampshire. It is a wonderful outdoor place called Nestlenook Farm, and it's the quintessential beautiful pond in the woods with covered bridges and horse-drawn carriages, and it harkens back to the old times of public skating on a Sunday or something like that. It's a great thing for the families and just a nice thing to do.
Sammy Hagar or Diamond David Lee Roth?
We're in the same age group. I grew up a Van Halen fan. It was the second concert I went to. We didn't steal my parents' car, but we took it without their permission and went out to the Worcester Centrum and got tickets, Ken and I, and that was great. There's only one Van Halen, and that's Van Halen with David Lee Roth. The other band is Van Hagar. Their egos wouldn't let them call it that.
Favorite hockey movie?
I'm going off the board. I don't think this one's been said. The Friends of Eddie Coyle. It's a 70s detective noir movie featuring Robert Mitchum and I think Peter Boyle, who later was a young Frankenstein, among other people. And within that, there's a couple scenes of them at the Old Garden in the early 70s, and there's outstanding footage of the big bad Bruins.
Red or black licorice?
You know, I'm a cook by trade. Red licorice isn't licorice. That's just a confection sweet. So I'll go with the black licorice.
Favorite Ring Stories episode?
That's a tough one. Really tough. I've enjoyed so many of them. I really have. I've enjoyed listening to them. I've enjoyed talking to you both about them. One of the more recent ones that I thought was great was the referee. Is it Paul Stewart? Well, I thought he was so enjoyable to listen to, and he's got so many great Ring stories, and he's just a real guy and a Massachusetts native. I thought that was fantastic.
You want to shout out to a teacher or a coach who had a big influence on you?
I'll go with my brother Peter, who, though wasn't a coach, he was the first chef who I worked under seriously. And he was a Johnson & Wales graduate. I, as you may see here, a Newberry College graduate. So I feel as though I got the Johnson & Wales education from him, and he did nothing but support me and help me and teach me and train me.
Pay for Netflix or share an account?
We paid for a while, and then we just ended up stopping it because we couldn't afford to have them all. We're on Hulu these days.
Last question. Three dinner guests, dead or alive, who you got?
Oh, I forgot this might be a question. Both of my grandfathers, to start. One of them passed before I was born, but I've been told I'm a lot like him. And then my mother's father, just a nice guy who I didn't get to know well enough. You know, we were mentioning earlier talking about mortality and things like that. So feel as though spending time with those two gentlemen would be great. And I'm going to leave it at that. I'm not going to invite anyone else. It's just the three of us.
Thank you very much for playing along. Bob, there's a couple of things in there. I'm sure you wrote some things down. You look like you're ready to go. So since I've just been doing all the talking, why don't you go?
One of the things I love about this man, Matt, is that he's positive. He brings positivity to everything. You ask him what the biggest shithole is, he tells you what the most beautiful place is.
That was a cop-out, in my opinion, but go ahead.
And but that Jackson, New Hampshire, that was a pond? Or is it a rink?
It's a pond, more so.
Okay.
I could have gone down to what we used to skate growing up. My father used to flood the bottom of the hill. I think I mentioned, Bob, in one of your posts, I answered a question or I responded to you. My father used to flood it for us down the street. We lived on a hill, and it was hot water in the winter that he'd pull out of the faucet, and it was just this beautiful, pristine area for us to skate. And because it was the hill, we called it the swamp. And if, you know, there'd be errant pucks that went in between the trees, and, you know, you get tripped up on logs and cracking your shins and things like that. And there was one time where I went down early in the morning, and I was the first to skate, and that was beautiful. I'm having a good time until my brother, who I just was so complimentary of, came down, and he was none too happy that I had snowed up the ice before he and his friends were going to come down and have their game or shoot around or whatever they were going to have. And he proceeded to put the broom in my hand and make me sweep for hours. That's one of the things when you're the younger brother, what you got to put up with.
Today's guest is the only American to play and referee in the National Hockey League. In 2018, he joined his grandfather, Bill Stewart, as an inductee in the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. Please welcome to the show the 6'1" left winger out of Dorchester, Massachusetts, from the 53 birth year, number 22, Paul Stewart. Oh, you know, we didn't talk about.
Do it.
Dorchester hat trick.
Well, the Dorchester hat trick, I tell people my first game in the NHL Well, my total goal scores in the NHL are two. I scored two goals, one against Vancouver, one against the Islanders. But my first night, I had a hat trick. And people look at me and go, how'd you do that if you only scored two goals? So I had a Dorchester hat trick. I fought O'Reilly, Jonathan, and Secord in a row. And a lot of people will say, well, that's something. I said, yeah, I didn't count Cashman in the warm-up. And it's kind of funny because the aspect of Boston Garden to me was the mecca for my travels.
And everybody was there, right? Because it was in the garden. And
it was Thanksgiving night. If they weren't there, they were watching. When I first got there, all the Bruins fans, of course, were cheering for the Bruins. And then I did my thing, and all of a sudden, I started to get some recognition and some respect. Uh-huh. And the TV commentators, Fred Cusick and Johnny Pearson, were talking about me and Bob Wilson. And, of course, they knew who my family was. And it was, to me, the ultimate goal. And after the game was over, I said to Demers, I'm done. I threw my skates in the river after the game. I went outside the garden and threw them in the river. And I told Demers, I'm done. I did what I wanted to do. I got to the National Hockey League. I played a game. He says, you're making $55,000 US. You might want to come to Hartford with us. I said, okay, I'll go.
I think there's two things at play, Bob, though. One is your perspective as hockey dad, and then your son's last game for him. How did you as a parent discuss things with him? I mean, because as I know him, he's got such a great temperament, and that, it, you know, being a goalie suits him very well.
So wait, Bob, before you answer that, you've always said that your instruction, the way you've learned it, was the first couple minutes in the car ride, you talk about it and you put it away. What was the first 2 minutes in the car after the game?
There was no car ride.
Ah, what happened?
He drove himself home. There wasn't even a bus ride.
So there wasn't the conversation. So the conversation didn't happen. So have you guys sat down since then and talked about
it? No, once he got home, we sat around and talked it over a little bit.
It was cool. We talked about it.
He's ready to, we might've given him a beer.
Just said, pour him a scotch, same thing.
Yeah. He knows it's over. Like he's ready. He was ready for it to be over and everything like that.
Did you guys have any conversations about it coming to an end? Any conversations on his thoughts on that or anything like that? Or just, it was like, he knew it, he dealt with it, it got there, it was over. And he said, yeah, I was ready for it.
I don't think you couldn't have because he's in the playoffs and you don't want to start talking about the end.
Yeah.
But no, you know, like in your senior year that this is eventually, you know, it's a lot. It's like we were talking about mortality. You're way closer to the end, the beginning, and your end has a very definitive end, you know?
Yeah, it came up a little bit, you know, and it was just, you know, it definitely came up during the college search application process because it's like, well, do you want to go to a college where you can maybe play club hockey? Because, you know, a lot of kids that play in high school do that.
Yeah.
And, that was not a priority for him at all.
So it wasn't one of the considerations in choosing a school.
I definitely went through and looked up what kind of teams they had at these different schools. And then I pointed it out. I'm like, oh, this place has club hockey, but it's like D1. So you probably can't do it. This one has D2. You probably could do it if you wanted to. This one doesn't have it at all. And so he's ended up going to a school that does not have it at all.
Got it. You know, to be a hockey player, there's a huge commitment of time. In general, to be a goalkeeper, I think there's an added pressure that you deal with the whole time. And there's got to be some sense of relief for him that while he's bummed it's over, he no longer has that I'm the last line defense thing that you felt as a parent.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be different. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of life lessons in there and shit. You know how sports are, right?
My dad was my coach most of the time for baseball, and my dad was a very, very good baseball player, and I wish I listened to him a little bit more. But when
that's the other thing. I can't tell my kids anything, so there's no sense talking about it.
But when it was coming to an end and he and I would talk about it, he was sad because it was coming to an end for me, but he had my brother who was 6 years younger, so he was still working with my brother. But my mother was not sad. My mother hated sitting in the stands and watching me pitch. Hated it.
Yeah, Monica's pretty much in that camp. Oh, she's like, God. Okay, that's enough hockey. Yeah.
And I found out later on, and I didn't know this. This is kind of cool to find out later. it wasn't, you didn't always, people didn't always carry like water bottles and coffee cups back in the 80s and shit. That wasn't like a thing.
You mean the parents?
Anybody. You didn't just walk around with like a water bottle and stuff. Nobody was like, well, I got to hydrate. Yeah. I got to get me a bottle of water.
Everybody's got a bottle the whole time.
Everybody's got something. Well, my parents and those guys, what they did was somebody got one. This is the best. Somebody got one of those, what are they called? Calf skin things. That is a calf skin that you put wine and liquor in. That's
like a flask. A bottle.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And
it's like a bladder like, kind of
it's
thing.
It's like a bladder thing. Yeah. It's like a calf skin bladder that you can put like a lot of stuff in. And they would go to the concession stands and they would buy a soda and that. When their soda was over, I found out they were filling up those soda cups with wine, the women, because the women didn't want to fucking think about their kids pitching and hitting and getting hit and stuff. And my mother, it's like, the only way I can go to the game is if I could have a glass of wine, basically is what it came down to. I didn't find it out till like 25 years later, though, which was really fun when they finally told me. It's like when you're a kid and you finally... You reveal secrets to your parents. My parents were revealing the secrets to us from that. It was a lot of fun.
I just think good for them for being so covert, you know, having their.
Oh, yeah. Well, because they didn't want to be disrespectful to everybody. But also my mother, the people around her must have known, because my mother on one glass of wine was gregarious and loud and laughed in the life of the party. But if she didn't have that, she would be sitting like this.
So took the edge off her. You know, took the edge off.
Yeah.
Exactly. Took the edge off. If she liked Indica back then, I could have, you know, but she didn't. Bob, were you any place else? Was
hockey
there
wise?
Like a goalie practice of any kind? Was there any studio pad thing? Did you go to
Wooster
or anything like that during the week?
No, dude, ever since you started driving, the only time I get to go to the rink is when there's a game.
All right. So let's have this conversation.
That's been the case for like over a year now.
My daughter's a sophomore. She buses to school. We live in two separate places. We split the bus cost. The bus is going up 40% to the point where it doesn't make any sense to pay for the bus any longer. It makes sense to take the bus money and buy a car. I wish that shit happened when I was a kid, where it didn't make sense for my parents anymore, so they had to buy my ass a car. I had to buy my own car, get my own insurance.
Dude, you're going to be so psyched when you don't have to pay for that stupid bus.
So this is interesting, because I was talking earlier about, you know, being in that moment. Bob, I don't know if you were on the call yet, Dave, but I was saying that as you get older and you start to realize your mortality, you start to enjoy and be in these moments more and you understand those things. I'm driving my daughter to school and we have playlists in the car on Spotify. And one of them is just her name for school. And then there's one of mine, a couple of that. And when I hit hers, there's a couple songs that I just hate. But ABBA comes on, Dancing Queen, and she is singing. And I'm looking in the mirror because I got her in the back seat. And she's just going to school and she's in the happiest mood. And I'm just sitting there thinking, you know, in 2 years she's going to college and that's not going to be going on anymore. So let's just sing some Dancing Queen. So I rolled the windows down and we're singing Dancing Queen all the way up to school. And she's like, Dad, you got to turn it down. We're at the school. And I'm like, no, we don't have to turn it down. They did ABBA last fall. So I was like, we have to turn it. Your whole school is all into it. So I had ABBA cranking and she's embarrassed, hiding her head, getting out of the car. And I was like, Dancing Queen!
That's fun. That is really fun.
Oh my God, it was so. And I was
you were the coolest.
Yeah, it's because, I mean, God, that's going to go away in 2 years. And I'm going to miss that. I'm be like, God, it's so freaking quiet in this car, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, grab it while you can. My brother-in-law taught me that long ago. Right. You just have a limited amount of time with him, so.
Dave, I found out earlier today that the person that hired me to be an independent consultant with this consulting firm who had long haul COVID is in a coma and they're pulling the plug tomorrow. And I didn't know her that well, but she was really gracious to me. But everybody at the company that I do some side work for is devastated. And it's yet again, another one of these things where like, it's just death, 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 death. As you get older, I don't think they prepare you mentally for the mental aspect of your heroes and your friends and your family dying without you feeling like you're next.
Yeah,
no matter
the conversations change when you're especially your old friends and all your great, great friends. We've noticed that the discussions of the topics are just about getting older, hitting these milestones. And the big ones are the musicians, the sports stars, the entertainers, those people. Right, there's certain ones that are really, really strike hard.
Yeah. Now you start to see stuff like, I'm thinking of, must have been 3 years ago, I went to a Cornell game and they were doing a thing for the 1970 championship team. Mm-hmm. And yeah, those guys hobbling out there. I'm like, oh, shit.
Dude, it's 53 years ago.
Mm. Yeah. It was 50 at the time, but yeah, so they're like 72 years old or something.
Yeah,
you know? But
it's like,
but wow, a lot of them were like, these old jocks are all broken down. Half of them had canes and walkers and stuff. A couple of them look good.
Did you see Irv Cross passed away, and they said he had maybe the worst case of CTE you'll ever have seen?
Really? We haven't heard much from him lately, have we?
I didn't realize this, but Bob and I both lived on the East Coast together at the same time in the New York area, and we were there when sports radio started, and we were there when Mike and the Mad Dog started, WFAN started, ESPN at night. I mean, Bob and I pretty much every night sat at the TV to from 11 till 11:45 or whatever until we'd fall, you know, and then, but I mean, I had Madden and Summerall doing my games because it was the NFC Giants games every week. I had the two of the best freaking guys doing every Giant game. I had Kiner, Murphy, and Lindsey Nelson for the first 20 years of the Mets. Then I got Keith Hernandez, Ron Darling, and Gary Coleman. And these guys, I mean, they're phenomenal. They're the next 20 years. McCarver was in the middle there for about eight with Kiner at the end of his career. So McCarver was the Met voice for a while. But all the, I didn't realize, I had, was fortunate enough that my teams have had some of the greatest announcers in sports of all time. And then to be there when WFAN started, Mike and the Mad Dog, dude, we must listen to Mike and the Mad Dog every day.
Oh yeah. That was the default station, 6:60 a.m.
6:60 a.m.
So just to put a bow on the last game. Also, shout out to my Uncle Bob, who came up from Connecticut to go to the game.
Go Uncle
we
Bob.
Went over to the, yeah, you guys know Uncle Bob.
I know Uncle Bob. Uncle Bob! Yeah, so
we went over to sidelines for a little pregame action with the other parents, so that took the edge off a little bit, you know, some beer and some wings, then go into the game. Yeah, Ring Stories is not over. Don't unsubscribe, people. Keep listening. We're going to have more episodes. I'm going to be going to some games. I might go to some of the MIA playoff games coming up. We got Cornell's probably going to be in the NCAAs, knock on wood.
We got some dream guests we still might try to get. Dude, what about the what's the thing that you were going to do with the poll? Has that happened yet, or is it happening? Or
the Greasy summer poll. Yeah, Greasy in poll. Gloucester,
yeah,
Mass.
In June.
Okay, all right.
Yeah,
Bob's going to do live from the Greasy poll this year.
Two-time guest Phil Nicastro announces the Gloucester Fishermen hockey games and football games. Invited me to announce the Greasy Pole with him. So
that was, by the way, one of the cooler things when we had him on as a guest, and the station, the folks that he worked with allowed us to have access to the audio of that game for the podcast and gave us permission. So Bob could say something about something and then we'd have him doing the audio, right? That was beautiful. So thank you. Let's shout out to them. Who was that, Bob? What was the name of that place again?
Phil Nicastro. Oh, no, what?
The place that gave us the permission.
Cape Ann Live.
Thanks, guys. That was cool.
And that was last week, Matt.
Thanks, Bob.
My pleasure. David Genovesian, thank you so much for being on the Ring Stories podcast. You've been a marvelous guest.
It's been a lot of fun, guys. I appreciate what you do, and this was a treat for me.
That'll do it for this episode of Ring Stories. Once again, we want to thank the G-Force for coming in and playing wrist shots with us. For Matt Hoff, producing out in Beverly Hills, California, this is Bob Winter reminding you to work hard, have fun, don't be a dick. This is Ring Stories.
Hi, this is Matt Hoff, and you're listening to Ring Stories, a Remsen Ave production.
Spread it out. So that ice, still to this day, it's like light blue, that ice at the Chelmsford Rink.
It's always light blue because the kids.
Light blue. People say, oh, this beautiful ice. Because we had to disperse. We already painted the whole thing white. The kid with the blue paint fucking tipped it over.
A gallon?
Me and Clocky. Flinny worked for them a little bit. But it was these two brothers. Fucking bananas. They didn't give a fuck.